Hey everybody, Bees with Ben here. A big episode with a big keeper. Oh, a lot of bees. A big episode with a big beekeeper, with a big, big family. I have on the phone Sam Lockwood from Lockwood Beekeeping Supplies. Thank you so much for your time, Sam.
No worries at all. Glad. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
No, it's awesome. I was fumbling then. It's been a busy season for me, and I'm sure it's been busy for you. Now, like, there's so many different components. You've got the family all on board. So tell us, obviously, with bees, you know, we'll go back to the start. So when did you and the family sort of get into bees, Sam?
So my dad, Grant Lockwood, he started, he got a job with a beekeeper 45 years ago now. Worked for those guys for a few years and then decided he enjoyed it and bought himself 10 beehives and went from there. Now, my brother, older brother John, he's the head beekeeper. He's running about 8,000 hives now. Big family business. My other brother, Mark, he runs the tourist shop and the honey shop. He also brews his own beer.
Oh, awesome.
My sister, Claire, she runs the office. I run the honey factory and the supply part, and our mum cracks a whip at us all.
I love it. Wow. Yep. I thought I was busy, but you guys are flat out. Like, it's so now, as I was stumbling my words then at the intro, that you guys, you're in the full swing of it now, wouldn't you? You'd be in the full swing, or how's it all the season looking
for
you guys?
So we're halfway through the season. It's been a great season for us so far. A lot better than the last 3 or 4 years, as everyone knows, with the drought and bushfires and everything. It's finally good to get a bit of honey coming in there.
That's awesome, Sam. And whereabouts are you guys located? Like, which part of town?
Yep, so we're located in between Orange and Bathurst in New South Wales.
Awesome. And what's the season? You know, a lot of people sort of, obviously with the fires that we had early last year, were you impacted by them at all?
We didn't lose any hives directly, but we did lose a lot of our prime beekeeping land. A lot of our resources, went up, and some parts won't be back for at least 10 years. We don't think they were that badly burnt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and what about flows? So what's your main sort of nectar flows that you guys chase?
So our main ones are canola. Every year we go to canola, then orange blossom around the Griffith area, and then most years we've been getting good yellow box crops every year or every second year. But other than that, it's just we chase what's about. This year, after all the big rain, it's been a big ground floor a year. So Patterson's curse and a lot of thistle coming up now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The thistles. So you put bees on thistles?
Yep. Around our area, there's a few good thistle areas, and there's a bit of honey coming in well at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. That's really cool.
Yep.
And the weather, obviously, so you've said you've had a good season, first good season in a couple of years. So you're putting that down to sort of weather? Like, have you had a lot of rain in New South Wales?
Yeah, we have. Since September, spring, we had a wet spring, and we've kept having the follow-up rain ever since, so it's still looking pretty good, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Now, I'm an only child, so that means I don't play well with others or share. So how does it go with you guys being with your brothers and your sister? So you all got like little separate businesses which all work under one, or you all sort of work together?
Yeah, we all sort of have our own separate areas, but we all it's a family business, so we all get in and help one another out if someone needs a hand. Can have its days with working with your family every day, but we love it and wouldn't do anything else. Yeah,
that's awesome. And who's the best beekeeper in the family?
Have to be John. Yeah,
have to be John.
Yeah,
and you you'd have to have a few staff. Like I'm only small fry. And I've got a couple of helpers. You must have like an absolute band, you know, the family have a band of helpers there alongside you guys, because it's big. It's a big job.
Yeah, yeah. So we employ a lot of foreign workers. We bring them in on professional 457 visas. As a lot of people know, Australians don't like doing hard labour work. So we have to look elsewhere. With the COVID situation, we're actually quite understaffed at the moment because we can't bring any more workers in. But yeah, we work a lot in with the Philippines. We got guys from Turkey, South America. We got guys coming in from the Pacific Islands now on the Pacific Island Labor Scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys have been really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, question on there, Sam. I've got a mate of mine who's he's a dairy farmer out in Gippsland, and we were talking about this the other day, Alex, and as saying that the Australian workers are not as good. Now, why do you think that is? Do you reckon us Aussies generally, or not all of us, you know what I mean? Obviously, a lot of us are working like you guys, but do you reckon?
Yeah.
Do you reckon we, as a rule, overall, we prefer to have a beer and have a yarn rather than do the hard yards? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I'm a young fella, so I can't really say for the rest of the nation. But with beekeeping, it's a lot of travelling, and it'd be hard to travel away from your family for long periods of time. It's very hard for our workers to come in. They do leave their families from the countries they're from, but they are coming to work. They're great workers. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. They actually send a lot of money home because they are from third world countries. But as I said, they are professionals. We have to bring them in on professional visas, and we have to prove that they're professionals through training and things like that.
That's interesting. I spent a bit of time in New Zealand, and they get a lot of Filipinos helping with bees, and they absolutely swear by them because they're hard workers and they're good skills, because there's a lot of beekeepers in the Philippines, and they do really well. So that's really interesting. And speaking of sort of obviously work and so forth, what's the hardest part about your job, Sam?
I don't know, lifting heavy bee boxes, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Speaking of that, do you guys use 8s or 10 framers?
We use 10 frame.
10
frame,
so you must be strong. We're a little bit weaker down here in Victoria. We're predominantly 8s. But I'm hearing some beekeepers are starting to go from 10s to 8s, some of the big commercial beekeepers.
They get older, they're wearing out, I suppose.
That's right. What about the best part of the job for you? What do you love about sort of bees and beekeeping?
John, my older brother, he's the main beekeeper. I'm mainly in the honey factory most of the time, but I do love getting out in the bush and, love our country and love to see lots of different areas,
Awesome. And what's the age difference between you and John?
It's about 7 years between me and John.
Awesome.
Yep.
Okay. That's cool. And so now you're talking about your part, because obviously what you're doing, as you said, it's physically hard work. I mean, it's one thing working bees, out in the country or wherever you're sort of working them, but bringing those boxes back and uncapping and doing everything, it's a hard slog. So you're doing long days, I'm sure of it.
Yep. The boys, we all do long days, and it's a big team effort. From the hives right through to packing the honey. So we pack all our own honey as well.
Okay.
And
what's your honey label? What's your label?
So we pack under Goldfields Honey label.
Yep. Under Goldfields Honey. And you guys got a Facebook page?
We do. And our tourist shop, it's called The Beekeepers Inn.
The Beekeepers Inn. And is that on, how do we find that? That's on the web?
Yep, that's on the website, both Goldfields Honey and Lockwood Beekeeping Supplies and the Beekeepers Inn. It's all on the web and all on Facebook. You can catch up with us there.
Awesome. And so the little tourist shop, tell us about that, because I've seen there's quite a few in Tassie, and it's awesome. And whenever, whenever I'm traveling, no matter where I'm going, I always, you know, you find a little honey shop and checking it out and so forth. So, so your this little shop that's open to the public, like obviously 7 days a week.
6 days a week, so we're open Tuesday to Sunday, 8 to 4.
Yep.
So, yeah, we've got a wide variety of different varieties of honey. So we try and keep at least between 8 and 10 different varieties.
Yep.
Usually you can come in and taste all the varieties, but due to COVID, we've just shut that down for the meantime. But, yeah, all pure Australian honeys from all around Australia. We do buy in a bit off other beekeepers for very unique varieties of honey. And, yeah, then we have all our other farm shop items, local produce from around our local area. And, yeah, you can grab a meal. We've got a couple of chefs in there that do a great job, yeah.
Wow. Well, how awesome. So you've got some chefs in there cooking up a feed and cooking up a storm too.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. And what about talking about honeys, is there one particular favourite that you like, Sam?
One of my favourites would probably be the Mugga Ironbark.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sort of describe that sort of flavour. Now, how could you sort of describe that?
It's a eucalypt, the Mugga Ironbark. It's a light in colour. And, yeah, it's a nice mild flavour, but it is hard to describe. But it's mild, just a nice eating table honey, really.
Yeah. Is it light? Is it lighter in colour or a bit more darker?
Yeah, it's lighter in colour.
So similar to like a yellow box, would you say?
Similar, yeah.
Yep. Yep. And is there any particular honeys that you find are more popular than others? It's sort of in the shop?
Yeah, a lot of the darker, stronger flavoured honeys seem to move out quite fast. Your stringy barks and yellow box is a big one, is a popular one. But yeah, we seem to find the darker, stronger flavoured ones seem to sell a lot quicker.
Interesting. And as far as in the shop, like with COVID, you know, COVID-19 and so forth, changing things and obviously be a little bit tricky, as you said, you can't do, you know, tastings and so forth. But have you found like with the honey sales that's increased and it's commanding better money since COVID's happened?
Yeah, you could say that. A lot of people are really conscious of where their food is coming from now. They're starting to read their labels a lot more and trying to look for Aussie food and products, produce, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. That's because I've noticed the same. You know, people, since COVID's happened, more people are wanting something natural and pure and so forth. So that's really, really sort of taken off. And what about, do you guys chase any Manuka, any of the Jolly Bush up there?
Well, we do have some sites that have got Manuka on them. We have tried to have a go at it, but there's usually another predominant flowering species nearby that just stuffs it up for us.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yep. So as opposed to, just being concentrated on the leptosperms, the bees are going something else. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it might be yellow box flowering at the same time or something, yeah.
And do you help, you sort of mentioned before with your brothers helping and so forth, do you sort of, you're on the road much with John helping, or so you're just really working the factory and doing the honey extraction?
Oh, I've got one load of bees that I run myself.
Oh yeah, awesome.
So yeah, I get out. And if they really get stuck, I'll get out and give them a hand. But yeah, we're all kids where Dad taught us how to beekeep and how to use a smoker and everything. So. Even Mark in the cafe, if we really get stuck, he can come out and give us a hand. Yeah,
that's awesome. Now, for those that are listening, because I get there's a bit of a mixed bag of people who listen to this podcast. So we've got everyone from like a recreational beekeeper, amateur beekeeper, has got one hive to you know, I've got commercials. You know what I mean? That's sort of So now, when you say a load of hives, now some people might think a load, you know, oh, okay, they get 8 hives on their 6x4 trailer. Okay. how many hives do you have on a load?
We run 144 hives to a load.
144 hives. So that's still a lot of work. That's still
it is. Yeah,
that's still a lot.
Yeah, it's sort of my part-time job, if you say that.
Almost your hobby. Almost like your hobby.
Yeah. So I go out on the weekend and have a play with them, yeah.
That's awesome. I absolutely love it. There's so many beekeepers I'd love, you know what I mean, who would love to have 144 hives. You know what I mean? It's really cool. Like it, but I know it's a lot of work. You know, sometimes people getting into the industry, you know, think, oh, this is, you know, having a couple of hives at home is one thing.
That's right.
But as a job, it's hard work. What would you say to someone wanting to do it full time? Is there anything you'd sort of, any advice you'd tell them? Someone wanting to get into the industry?
Yeah, get a job with a beekeeper at least a season.
Yes.
See if you like it to start with. They'll teach you a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. What I'll do is I'll put in the show notes the website for you guys to check it out, because as you said, if you're some looking for workers, who knows? You know what I mean? Someone listening to this could absolutely work great, you know, work for a season. And and speaking of working for a season, what about during winter? Obviously there's stuff to be, you know beekeepers' works never ever ends, but do you have a bit of downtime?
No, not really. So my part of the business, the supplier part, so we manufacture all our own timber beehives from scratch, all Aussie made gear, so right through from the flat pack to assembled, ready to go, painted. So winter time is our busiest time for that gear.
Wow.
That's when we really get stuck in. Assembly gear and
Now speaking of sort of gear and so forth, you guys, now you sell something which is, I talk to a lot of people, and I was talking to someone in America the other day, and everyone seems to be swearing by this pollen supplement. Now, when I say pollen supplement, sometimes if someone's in the city and they got their beehive, obviously they're getting a lot of diversity of pollen. Yep. So they're probably not going to need a sup. You know, who's putting them onto more of a monofloral type crop or want to build up their bees, there's a product called Ultra Bee. And now tell us about that, because as far as I know, you're the only guys that are importing that from America. Is that right, Sam?
So we've got the import rights. It's from Man Lake. In America, so yeah, we import the Ultra Bee. Took a lot of permits and customs quarantine to be able to get that in, but yeah, we've got the license for that now. So the Ultra Bee, it's a protein pollen substitute. So as you said, if you're working one floral source, the protein of that flower might not be up to scratch to keep the bees breeding. So you can either feed the Ultra Bee in dry form or paddy form to give that extra protein, extra boost. We did use a lot and did sell a lot during the drought when there was just no natural pollen around, and it helped a lot of guys out and kept their bees alive. In the cities, they usually they can fly up to 5-6 kilometres, so you usually always got someone's flowers or gardens or something for them to forage on. But commercially it's a great product, and we'd be doomed without it for a couple of years.
I totally agree. And as far as a product, it's absolutely brilliant, because I always like tinkering around and trying things out, and I've tried quite a few pollen supplements, tried making one myself, you know, the old soy flour and deactivated brewer's yeast and so forth. But the bees don't go for it. But with this Ultra Bee, the bees absolutely smash it. Like if you open feed it, they roll around in it, and it's like they do. Is there, I don't think, is there something in there, like probably it's a secret, so you probably can't say, but is there something in there that's not in something else? Because the bees absolutely love it.
Well, it's no real secret. All the ingredients listings are on the bag, so everyone knows what's in it. So you've got like corn maize, you've got carrot, celery, beetroot, watercress, soy flour. It's just all ground up into a fine powder. It's got all your full range of amino acids and fats and minerals, everything the bees need, but they are highly attracted to it. The colour is one thing. It's bright yellow in colour, so That would be attracting to the bees as well.
Oh, good point. Yes.
But, yeah, they really get stuck into it and, yeah, they love it.
That's a very good point, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't think about the colour as well because it's a really nice colour. And you know what? I'm not sure if you've done it, but I've actually tried a bit. It actually tastes nice. Like, it's not the sort of thing I'd like spread on me toast or me crumpets in the morning, you know. Yeah. But you know, but I've actually tried it, and it's got a really, I don't know how you describe it. It's like a real. It's almost. Would you say it's like a banana-y type tropical smell? I don't know how you'd sort of describe it. It's very unique.
Yeah, the smell, it's a hard one to describe,
Yeah, because it's not like the other. There's many, many different brands out there, and I've tried them all, and I've just found that, Ultra Bee. So if you're a beekeeper and you want to get Ultra Bee, and give it a go, and as I said, you know, if you're running in sort of in the country or you're running multiple hives and want to try something, I really encourage people to try it. Now, speaking of, you mentioned before, obviously you can open feed it, or make like a patty. Do you guys, speaking of patties, and it was a couple of years ago, 2 years ago now, and I had a bit of issues with the African small hive beetle larvae. Not so much of an issue for us in Victoria, you know, you do see them, but how do you guys go with them? Because you're all dealing with a more warmer sort of, humid environment. How do you guys go?
We did have a bit of a problem with the beetle getting into the soft patties. What we decided to do was just get a chucks cloth, and we put that under the excluder next to where the patty goes. And we were catching quite a few beetles, and they were getting stuck in there before they could get to the patty to lay their eggs in it. We find that reduced the larvae getting that quite a bit. But the patties, if the bees really need it, they'll chew right into the patties and they'll eat a patty within 5 to 7 days.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Hey, good advice. You know, for those with beetles, the blue chucks cleaning cloth. Do you guys fold them over or just leave them as one layer?
We'll fold them over twice and put a staple each side. We'll put one in, a fresh one in every couple of months. In every hive.
Awesome. Now, so put a staple, because I haven't tried that. So when you put a staple, so you're putting a staple so the beetles go in like a tube? You're making the chucks in like a tubular square?
No, it's just flat, so we just staple it so they're just easier to get out of a box and whack on the hive. So we don't have to fold them up out in the field,
Okay. Yep. Interesting. Okay, good advice for those got issues with, because that's what I use. You know, sometimes you get little traps.
Cheap, effective method. Yeah,
exactly. So for those listening, you know, got issues with small hive beetles, try doing that, Chuck. And I like your idea with the staple. I'm going to steal that one. I like that.
It's
a great advice because, as you're saying, it's when you fold them over, they can unfold and springs out and so forth. So, because the beetles are a bit of an issue. You know, what I mean, they're sort of, I think, more unsightly. And particularly if you don't have a strong colony and, you know, I mean, so they can sort of be an issue there. Now, on the subject of, obviously, you mentioned about, you know, building boxes and things over winter. So Lockwood Beekeeping Supplies, there's a Facebook page. Once again, I'll put that in the show notes. But so you guys, you're supplying, you know, everyone from like an amateur recreational beekeeper right through to commercial beekeepers?
That's right. Yep. You can buy one box or 1,000 boxes. We're sending our gear all over Australia now. A lot of gear for some reason goes into South Australia. Queensland, Victoria, everywhere. We're starting to get a good name and a good reputation for good quality, Aussie made gear.
Awesome.
And we want to keep it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you guys, you wax dip and paint the boxes. You do as well. Awesome.
Yeah, we can offer any service you need, flat pack, assembled, wax dip, painted, all ready to go.
Awesome. Now talk us through wax dipping, because I've done about 30 podcasts so far. Talk to the listeners why wax dipping is a good thing.
Yep. So we assemble our box. We have to do it assembled, because we heat the paraffin wax, a mixture of paraffin wax and micro crystalline. the microcrystalline sort of helps the wax draw into the timber. So we heat that wax up to about 160 degrees. It has to be that temperature to dip the timber in. And you'll see it bubble, and it sucks all the air and moisture out of the timber. We take that out, and take that out to dry from the wax, and you'll still see the wax sort of absorbing into the timber. So it's very important to get it to that 160. If it's too cold, the wax won't absorb into the timber. And if it's too hot, you'd be very careful because there is the flash point. Now, always have a fire extinguisher and wear all your protective gear. When doing it. But yeah, you've got to get that temperature right to put the paint on, because the paint won't stick if it's too cold.
Okay, interesting. It's funny you talk about the flash point. I've done a bit of wax dipping. Well, I do wax dipping myself, and I've put a box in that's been a bit moist, a bit wet. Yep. I think it must have been sitting on the ground and it's bubbled over. And I tell you what, it's you get a bit of a surprise as smoke and flames and everything's.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of funny. As when you mentioned about the fire extinguisher, I have two next to when I'm doing it. I found the powder ones work well, because I'd once, when I first did it, this was a long time ago, I used a water one, and that made it even worse. That's right. So that's so true. Now, you mentioned the paint. What type of paint do you guys use?
We use oil-based paint.
Okay.
One reason, the wax is oil-based itself. We just find that it sticks and adheres a lot better. We like a nice glossy finish. They can easily be cleaned or wiped off with a nice hard gloss enamel.
Awesome.
Water-based paint can just work just as fine.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a really, really good advice, because I've only ever used water-based, but I've never used oil-based. So I think you're right. It sticks sometimes if it's too cold, it doesn't stick well, and you're fighting and wrestling with it, and that's just I've had that happen. It's probably me being impatient, because it takes bloody hours to heat up that.
Yeah, it does.
And as far as any other products you guys sell, obviously you're selling some really cool things and so forth. So obviously you've got the Ultra B, which you sell, and you're obviously boxes and everything. What else do you guys sell?
We are one of the Manlake agents here in Australia, so we carry all their basic gear, all their smokers and hive tools and all their basic gear. We also try and support the Aussie manufacturers, so BK Smokers. We're a stocker for those guys as well. All your basic gear, your plastic frames and boxes, lids, bottom boards, anything you really need to get going.
That's awesome.
We also in the springtime supply quite a few nucleus colonies to commercial and hobbyist beekeepers to help them get started or recover from bushfire losses or drought losses.
Awesome. Okay.
For example,
So with the nukes, so someone can buy nukes from you. What type of queens do you use for them? Because you guys are doing everything. It's probably going to be a dumb question, but you guys do your own queens?
Yeah, we breed all our own queens, so they're mainly Italian queens. We buy in breeder queens from all over Australia. We like to mix up our breeding stock quite a lot. We're all tested, tried and tested. We check our nukes 3 or 4 times before we sell them and make sure they've got nice, healthy laying patterns and nice and strong for the customer.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool.
Yep.
And it's interesting, just sort of going back a bit of a step, you mentioned about Manlake. They sell some really cool products, and the Americans do some really cool things. And
they do.
Yeah, I use a lot of their the candle molds. So I'll have to talk to you off the podcast about that, because that's there's a guy doing up in Ipswich, but he stopped doing them. Rodney? Yeah, Rodney. And so I'll have to talk to you about that, because, their molds are, for those listening, candles is a bit of a science. You just wax fundamentally, but these molds are really thick resin, so it's got to cool down slowly, because if you cool wax
down,
really quick, it cracks. So I'll have to talk to you about those. I can't believe how busy you guys are. You guys are just so – it's just like – so would you say it's 6-7 days a week pretty much?
I work. 6 days a week to try and at least give myself one day off.
Yeah, yeah.
Never get caught up into work too much. We love our families and, want to spend time with them.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah.
And so what do you do in your downtime, Sam? You got a hobby on the side that you do?
I like to just get out and see the country. I do like to travel.
Yeah.
I used to travel a lot overseas before COVID and see the world. But, yeah, now it's a good opportunity to see our country without chasing a bee box.
yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's I'm the same. You know, it's like you sort of, you know, pre-COVID, it's, you know, traveling because there's some fantastic parts around the world and just so much to see. The more you think you sort of know, the more you realize you don't know when you start get out there. But it's so, you're so right. You know, with this, it's changed the way my thoughts are, is looking more what we have in Australia because we're such a beautiful, beautiful country. It's such a nice and last question, because I know you're busy, you know, and thank you once again for your time, Sam. Really appreciate it.
No worries at all.
This is awesome. Like as far as the industry, maybe sort of two questions. So your guys' business, the family business, where do you guys see it the next few years? And what about the industry? Where do you guys see it the next few years?
So we're always looking to grow our own business. We're always looking to expand and look for more opportunities out there. Whatever comes our way, we'll try and take it on. The industry, I personally think it's in the middle of or about to start a boom. Almond pollination is another big topic. You could talk about that all day, but it's about to start big time. It already is big, but there's a lot more plantations going in. They're going to need a lot more bees. I just see our industry about to expand and boom pretty big in the next coming years. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the almonds because I don't know if I read it or someone told me, each year they're putting in 8 or 10 or 20,000 more acres or hectares of almonds. Is that right? Something like that. Massive figure, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes them wonder where they're going to get the bees from. It's incredible the amount of almonds there are. You just go for a drive and it just goes forever. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, interesting times ahead. But it's also interesting that there's not a heap of young people sort of getting into it as well. Would you say that? Like they're sort of like out on their own? Like it's sort of more...
Yep.
Family businesses as such and the family gets involved. But would you say...
That's right.
Yeah, you don't see a heap of people sort of, you know, young... Well, there is. I'm not saying there's none.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just it's because I think what's the average age of a beekeeper is about 64 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right there. Unless you're in a family business, it's hard to crack into the industry. Takes a lot of hard work and a lot of knowledge to be able to do it. There are a few guys that are quite proud of the way they've started and they're actually having a crack. But, yeah, you are right. It is a dying industry in a way, but aging industry, but it is exciting in the next few years. I think it's going to be a pretty big boom. Yeah.
Oh, totally agree, Sam. It's going to be super interesting, the times ahead. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. So once again, I want to appreciate your time. You're absolute legend. Keep up the great work. Don't work too hard. And thanks so much for jumping on the podcast, Sam.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.